CliffCentral.com.
Alrighty then.
Yeah.
Yes, it is a Thursday morning, which means it's time for us to check in on the burning platform. And we've got...
Is Gareth trying to speak to us?
Gareth is not trying to speak to us, Canton. He actually is speaking to us.
Yes, come on, Canton. Try to behave.
On the other side of the Puravosford Dane.
This guy was supposed to be in studio this morning.
I've got feedback on my...
See why I didn't come in, because I knew that technically you wouldn't be able to figure it out, all of you. So I thought I'd just stay here. All right, Canton is in the studio with us. Pumi is in the studio. I am at my house, and we also have a guest coming in this morning, someone called Ashley Sauls. The first two is the Patriotic Alliance's premier candidate for Gauteng, former MMC for Health, Social Development, and Transport. So, Canton, people are still reeling from... some of your questions to Mayor Mpopalatse the other day, but I think she did really well.
I thought that the mayor acquitted herself very, very well indeed. No, really. But, you know, most people kind of get into an absolute state of panic when you start asking them reasonably tough questions. But
especially when you pitch up with photographs of low water bridges like you did. But she didn't. She didn't flinch. She was pretty good.
That stuff went viral after that. And you know, when you get to the point where Caxton papers are putting it on their front pages, then you know that you've actually managed to strike a chord.
So, Canton, I did see some things this week, and I don't know if it's as a result of the mayor being back in office or whether it's just the city feeling like it needs to finally do something. I saw them trimming weeds and cleaning up the islands on Rivonia Road, which is great because they haven't done that for months, if not years. Are there any other improvements we're starting to see? Because people are looking for those green shoots that we were promised so long ago, not just by mayors and politicians at local level, but even at the national level. Have you seen any improvements?
Well, I've seen fewer potholes in some parts of Johannesburg. I don't know if that's been the general experience. So I'm trying to look for the optimistic side of things here.
You've seen less potholes, you say?
Fewer potholes, potholes. In some parts of Joburg. But at the same time, in other parts, they've actually turned into like proper dongas.
Did you see the big story this week about the head of the JRA?
Well, we're supposed to be talking about the head of...
Oh, I'm very excited to hear about this. We will get into that just
now. And I know Pumi's got strong opinions on the subject lined up.
Whoa.
All right, well.
We only have an hour. We've got a guest coming in. And while we're waiting for the guest, first let's talk about 2024 and Donald Trump.
Yes, talk about 2024. Let's talk about
2024 and Donald Trump. We're going to have a very busy 2 years, guys.
Another Donald Trump candidacy.
I can't hear you, Canton. Canton's on mute, guys.
Canton's on mute, not me.
Okay, now hang on a second. I've been muted.
Simpiwe is very busy fluttering around the studio here today. She's helping us out.
I'm on mute right here on this thing.
No, you're back now. So you were saying a very interesting thing about Trump?
He's back. The very interesting thing is not going to be Trump itself, but the extent to which big tech can be reined in ahead of the 2024 elections. Because the amount of gamification that's been going on over the past couple of weeks around the 2024 elections is fairly hectic. So let me give you a very simple example. You go to YouTube and you try and search for Trump's announcement a couple of days ago that he's going to run.
Mm-hmm.
YouTube then serves you up with videos from 2016.
So that's
one of the immediate examples. And then if you scroll through and you try to be a bit more granular in your search, they will give you the CNN take on it. They will give you the ABC take on it, which are very short, expurgated editions of the same. So what they're trying to do is to craft a narrative. But here's the biggest narrative that's going on right now that people haven't actually got their heads around. The narrative is the big red wave failed to materialize.
Mm-hmm.
and Trump has been a disaster for the Republican Party and he has to go. This is kind of a uniform thing that you will see across almost every media platform right now, no matter where you go searching for it. That's what they're telling you. That, and they'll give you, here's a list of all of the Trump candidates that lost.
Yeah.
But actually, Trump endorsed, literally a couple of hundred candidates.
Over 300.
Yes, yeah. And the overwhelming majority of them won.
So then, is this just straight up bullshit?
Well, no, it's straight up spin. They're trying to manipulate you on the basis that they're trying to say that Trump's entire approach to this election was a failure. And I'm saying,
why do you think that is?
Because they don't want him to be going into the 2024 elections by being seen as a success on the part of the people who actually went and voted for him. And, there were essentially people who voted for Trump because of the fact that went out and campaigned and had these massive rallies.
But really, across the board, this does seem to be the narrative. But even on right-wing news sources, which I try to ingest as much as I do the mainstream and left-wing or organizations that I use for this kind of research, it does turn out in the numbers that of his gubernatorial and Senate picks, only a few got in. Some of his big, loud endorsements didn't happen. I mean, Brian Kemp was someone he didn't want to win, and he took the Senate comfortably. Carrie Lake in Arizona was not a success. He backed her fully. There are people like the guy who was running up against Kathy Hochul in New York, who was not a Trump guy, and thank God for him because they've won the House by such a slim majority.
But Gareth,
thanks
you
to
see,
people
you
in
are
New
now
York.
You are now proof positive that the New York Post, the New York Times spin on stuff has actually penetrated through. And we can drill down to a lot of those things that actually... So let's take the Carrie Lake example.
Yeah.
And Carrie Lake's election was essentially, once again, in Arizona, determined by one county. It was Maricopa County. Now, what was the issue in Maricopa County? In Maricopa County, when the polls opened in the morning, a significant number of the voting machines, primarily in the Republican parts of the city, were not working in the morning. Now, remember that you have a scenario in the U.S., unlike South Africa, where we have a public holiday on election day so that everyone can go out. People out there actually need to take time off from work in order to go and work. And remember that the majority of your Republican voters in those places are going to be essentially blue-collar workers. So, they've gotten to the polls early. Then, at the time at which the polls closed, there were massive lines of people who had missed on their chance to vote earlier on in the day. They came in the evening and tried to continue. They tried to vote at that point in the evenings, but the polls closed. And again, this is the prerogative of the local county officials. And so they were able to do that. But that race went down to the wire. They were counting for a couple of days after the elections played out. So I'm just going to park that.
Okay, but then, the Democrats would say...
As one specific example.
The Democrats would say, oh, no, here's Canton Pire. He's clearly a... an election denier.
Election denier.
No, that's what they call people.
No, I'm not
like
an
that.
Election denier. I'm saying that it's legal, but I'm saying that everyone actually takes the opportunity to try and tip the balance in their favor. And if it's legal, that's fine. There's no rigging. There's no gerrymandering. But, so everything that took place out there, though, was completely legal. And, the courts, in fact, ratified it. So...
But Gavin, you still haven't answered my why. Why is it so important that going into the presidential race,
yes,
there's this huge conspiracy of people who don't want Trump or Trump voters to believe that he has got the upper hand?
Well, the interesting thing that you need to take a look at is what happened over the past 48 hours. So over the past 48 hours, you might notice that there was a... quote, missile attack, unquote, on Poland.
Poland.
Okay. And immediately all of the media, without fail, said the Russians have now bombed Poland. We need to invoke Article 5 of NATO, and everyone needs to now rally around and essentially declare World War III.
Right.
And, you know, almost everyone without exception climbed on that bandwagon. And what's interesting is if you take a look across the board at U.S. politicians, the single thing that unites the Democrats and the Republicans is that military-industrial complex machine. And right now,
do you unites all their pockets,
exactly. entire economy. And right now, Trump is a candidate that is not part of that military-industrial complex machine. And that's why you've now got a scenario where the New York Post, which is part of the military-industrial complex machine, and all of the left-leaning media, they're all uniting on this. We need to get Trump out of here because otherwise he's going to come and the money supply actually dries up for the rest of us. And that's a very kind of clear indication. Remember, we spoke about this ahead of the elections, and I said the real divide is not in terms of Democrats versus Republicans. It's Trump Republicans versus non-Trump Republicans. And right now, the situation that we've got in the House is that the overwhelming majority of Republicans that came in were Trump-endorsed Republicans. And how that translates now going into the next 2 years ahead of the elections is going to be very interesting, because the question is whether they are now going to start doing things like getting tough on the big tech manipulation. And the big tech manipulation is very clear. You know, to anyone out there right now, fire up Google in one browser window, fire up DuckDuckGo in another browser window, go and search for Trump-endorsed candidates.
Yeah. I've just done that now. So this is part of the problem, Canton, is that people don't know who to believe. I mean, Amir says, for example, why should we trust you, Canton? You said that Trump would win 2 years ago. People are listening. Paying attention.
Well done, Amir. You were paying attention, absolutely. And the question in terms of whether Trump is in a position to win in 2 years' time, he's going to have a really rough time. I think that we haven't yet seen the extent to which the military-industrial complex is actually going to rally together and try and keep this guy out of office. Frankly, I don't think he's got a chance in 2024 at this stage, just simply because there are far too many people who have a vested interest in keeping the guy out of office.
So DeSantis, then, is that who you put your vote
on? No, I don't think it's going to be DeSantis, because I don't think DeSantis is going to go up Trump. You see, that's going to be, you know, the other interesting thing, because I think that DeSantis right now, he's going to serve out his two terms as Florida governor. And thereafter, actually throw his hat into the ring.
Now what?
But going ahead in 2024.
Really? You think he's going to wait? He's going to wait it out? Anybody go against Trump in the Republican Party then for that president's candidacy?
In the Republican Party right now, I can't think of it. But you see, the more interesting thing for me is who is going to be the Democrat candidate who goes up against him. And that's the far more interesting question in my book. By the way, the interesting thing, Gareth, if we go back to the Senate race in Georgia.
Okay, that's
okay.
Raphael Warnock and Herschel Walker.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. Now, but you see, that election went to a runoff.
Yeah.
And the reason why the election went to the runoff is because both candidates got less than 50%. Why did they get less than 50%? Because there was a Libertarian candidate who actually took up the balance. Mm-hmm. And so the interesting thing in terms of that race, okay, you ask yourself, is a Libertarian voter more likely to vote Democrat or Republican?
Probably Republican.
Yes. So if you, you know, take those numbers and if you take the Libertarian candidate out of that particular race, then, yeah, Herschel would have walked that particular election, which again, is another kind of interesting take on that. Now, that doesn't mean that he's going to win when they have the runoff in 2 months' time, because you might have election fatigue at that point.
Yeah.
So, you know, but remember, election fatigue is going to cut both ways. So if you're going to have Democrats, you're going to say, oh, well, you know, we've got control of the Senate. So, yeah, you know, whether the Republicans go from 49 to 50 actually doesn't matter to us anymore. So they might end
don't
up
you voting. Don't you think, talking about the military-industrial complex and everything else, don't you think the average American is pretty damn confused as to why they're giving so much money to the Ukraine? I mean, I'm even confused, and I'm not an American taxpayer. They've just, Joe Biden is now saying they need to give a couple more billion to Zelensky in the Ukraine. And a lot of people saying, well, what is this for? You know, are you really standing up for democracy? Because democracy is, first of all, in the case of Ukraine, millions of kilometers away. It's not the kind of thing that anyone in America particularly cares about. As far as most Americans are concerned, they wouldn't know the difference between a Ukrainian and a Russian, even if they were standing in front of them. And people are looking at this with more suspect eyes than maybe ever before, Canton. Or do you think I'm being extra cynical?
In fact, there was a Ukrainian who was killed in New York City last week because they thought that he was a Russian. So yes, you're absolutely right.
Yeah, so proving my point. I mean, it's now the bill for this is going into the tens of, if not the hundreds of billions. And people are saying, well, why? It was, you know, it was different when we were defending Europe against the Nazis. But what are we doing now?
The thing that's confusing is the fact that you say, why are they giving the Ukraine all this money? But it's not a gift, right? It's a loan.
Yes.
And that loan is meant to buy arms and weapons. And guess who they buy the arms and the weapons from? So it's a very big Ponzi scheme. Like we were talking about.
Well, remember Afghanistan, Gareth. They ended up leaving Afghanistan. And they left behind $380 billion worth of equipment. I mean, there were more attack helicopters left behind in Afghanistan than most of the U.S.'s allies have actually received from the U.S.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but it was $300 billion that's already been spent. So, you know, what are they going to do? Bring it back and then Congress is not going to give them more money because, you know, they're going to say just redistribute the stuff we've got. So no, rather leave all that stuff out there and then spend more money.
New stuff.
Fun stuff.
Quickly, before we're joined by Ashley Sauls, you talk about this tech thing. And this is a massive, massive story that doesn't seem to be getting the oxygen that it needs. Is there complete imbalance in Silicon Valley when it comes to politics? And what do you think the entry of Elon Musk may or may not do to this? Because people are talking about this more than ever before. But the only place that you don't see any of this discussion is on the internet, because it's so throttled and controlled, and there are narratives and there are algorithms that have been fiddled with in order to deliver particular results. How bad is it, and is there a way to fix it?
Look, bad is kind of a loaded question, and and I don't like, you know, using words like bad. Just simply, the idea is that you need to have the playing fields actually level. So one of the things that Musk has been doing is saying that the algorithm is going to be transparent, and that means that anyone can actually dig down and see how Twitter is actually doing the filtering. The reason why I believe that he will do that is, remember that he open sourced all of the technology that went with Tesla, on the assumption that his competitors can actually pick it up and make use of it. And similarly, you know, he came up with the concept of the Hyperloop. He didn't actually put it into business himself. He just put everything out there. So at that level, I do believe that the guy is actually quite serious in terms of what he's going about. We are going to see a significant shift in terms of CNN, as an example, because ever since the merger that took place between Warner and Discovery, there's been a strong emphasis on turning those businesses into places that actually make money, as opposed to, you know, $300-something million that was blown on CNN Plus, and then they shut it down. So is there a shift that's going to be coming between now and then? I think absolutely so. There's going to be transparency in terms of Twitter. There's going to be increasing scrutiny in terms of Facebook. And you've seen the massive scale back that has already taken place in terms of Meta's employees.
Well, I was going to say, one of the things that has been hardly spoken about is how in the past 2 weeks, almost that entire tech industry has gone into either a slowdown. I mean, I think the air has been sucked out of the room by the fact that everybody's talking about everything that's happening at Twitter, right? So with all of the layoffs, with all of, is it right sizing, is it downsizing, with the open sourcing, with the what is being termed in the tech circles as Twitter chaos and meltdown, right, is one of the things that we're not talking enough about, is watching what else is happening in the tech sector. And the fact that in the tech sector, there has been a massive shedding of jobs. I'm still reeling from the fact that Meta, you know, I don't know if you saw the letter that that the father of Facebook put out last Friday.
Zuckerberg, yeah.
11,500 jobs they had to let go of.
It's a fortune.
Like, what?
Yes, and the number's actually going to go up to 13,000.
And the number keeps going up. But, you know, and I was listening to a podcast about that, and hence my word right-sizing, right? Mm. Is it really downsizing or is it right-sizing? Because even though these numbers are huge and we said for all the people that are losing these jobs, these are also numbers that have been brought onto the sector in the past 2 years. Was it just, you know, being optimistic on the part of all of these people in the past 2 years, bringing on all these jobs, and now they
part of the problem that we've had in terms of the media in the US is the same as the problem that we have in the media in this country, where the media in our country right now doesn't really exist to make a profit. And you ask yourself how many of our media outlets are actually profitable in this country. So, you know, is Arena Media actually profitable? No. Is the
IOL?
IOL. Is the Independent Group profitable? No.
Daily Maverick?
Does ENCA make money? No.
Newsroom Africa?
Newsroom Africa, do they make money? No. They're all dependent on the people who actually own the platforms continuing to inject cash into it. And the idea behind the reason why all of these platforms actually exist is in order to sway particular political opinions. So, but the shift that's happening in the US now, Gareth, is that because of the fact that you have shareholders there that are now sitting up and saying, hey, hang on a second, we actually need to fix this. So Zuckerberg's problem is that his shareholders have basically said, you'd been dumping all of this money into trying to develop the metaverse, this virtual reality environment, and it's you're not showing us a clear path to profitability in terms of how it's going to work. Nobody wants to walk around wearing a headset. You know, nobody wants to walk around wearing glasses if they're not used to wearing glasses, and it's just not going to work. And more to the point,
you're not going to walk around. You're going to sit in your lounge.
No, people with competing technology, so. Bill Gates has competing technology. He doesn't want Zuckerberg to own that space. Google, you might remember, had Google Glass a few years ago. Mm. And they've still got that tech. And they pulled it out at that time because it was not cost effective for them to be further developing it. But nobody wants Zuckerberg to actually end up owning that environment. So
deliberate sabotage.
Yeah, but it's what we would call competition in capitalism.
So just one thing. One last thing, because I do want to squeeze this in before we get to the Patriotic Alliance and local politics. I saw a clip yesterday which was pretty interesting about Chairman Xi of the Chinese Communist Party tucking in to Justin Trudeau at the G20 for leaking a conversation the two of them had had to the press. He, through an interpreter, basically dressed down Justin Trudeau and said, everything we discussed yesterday has been leaked to the papers. That's not appropriate, and that is not the way a conversation should be conducted. And Trudeau came up with some mealy-mouthed reply. But it's clear to me who the strong man in that discussion was, and it's obvious also that Trudeau was quite shaken afterwards because he walked away like a, you know, a wet puppy dog afterwards. And I just wonder what the power dynamics are at a thing like the G20. It's clear that it's, you know, all nations are not equal, and some nations, even if they are supposed to be below or above other nations. They have leaders who stand up and take no nonsense. And clearly, that is the kind of person the G is. Any comments on that?
A very, very important thing for us to remember is that when the powers from the East are talking to each other, and they are talking to each other all the time. So I'm talking primarily now in terms of Russia and India and China. The conversations between them are ongoing, and they're very intense. But all of it takes place outside of the public eye, and right. That really is the essence of diplomacy. Diplomacy has been dead in the Western world for a significant chunk of time now. Everything is all about posturing. And it is, so, you know, a very good example is this purported attack on Poland, where everyone was saying invoke Article 5. And then suddenly no one turns around and say, okay, we need to invoke Article 5 against Ukraine, because Ukraine's not a NATO member.
Yeah.
And Ukraine has now attacked a NATO member, but and so the narrative shift actually happens. And to try and get people to understand that that most of the BRICS countries and by extension, you know, people like the Saudis and the Iranians, even the Nigerians, actually don't play in that public posturing space. Everything actually takes place behind the scenes.
And this is all Trudeau has.
It's a disadvantage.
This is all. This is all Trudeau has. This is all he can do.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because right now, even in his own backyard, he's facing issues in terms of dissent.
All right, let's get local because Ashley Saul's the first Patriotic Alliance premier candidate for Gauteng and a former MMC for Health, Social Development and Transport is on the line and joins us this morning. Ashley Saul's, very nice to have you. How are you?
Hi, Gareth, I'm very well, thanks. And to your colleagues in studio there as well.
No problem.
I was going to join you all in studio. For some reason, I got the time wrong.
Yeah, well, listen, you Patriotic Alliance guys need to get your act together, because it seems at the moment all you're doing is ruining coalitions and messing up local governments. Or is that just my opinion? Give us a little brief on where you guys are at the moment. You want to be the premier of Gauteng. But at this stage, all we see is a whole lot of local coalitions breaking down. We see the Patriotic Alliance standing up for certain things and not for others. It seems to me a bit of a mess, just as an observer. Do you want to tell us how the Patriotic Alliance is faring in Gauteng, and then we can take it from there?
Yeah, I think your intro comment, it is just an opinion. Patriotic Alliance is very, very clear around what our mandate is. And we are not destroying coalitions. What we are doing is we have made our message clear that the reason why we go into a power sharing arrangement is specifically to get the power to serve, to ensure that our constituency and the residents that we serve, that we have an opportunity to provide such a service. And we also was very clear from the onset that at a particular point where we feel that we are disrespected, and two, that we are not enabled by whatever arrangement to ensure that we are able to provide our services to our constituency and to the residents of the city or wherever we are in power, that we will be clear that we will not stand for it, and we will make a decisive move or take decisive action to leave such an arrangement. And that's exactly what we have been doing consistently. We have not acted in any untoward way. We were very transparent and truthful from the onset. As a matter of fact, our president, His Excellency Gayton McKenzie, is the only politician in this country that has been truthful and transparent to the citizens of this country.
Pums, you want to pick this up?
So speaking of being in office and not power, and the mandate that you have, maybe you can share that with us. I think, until about 2 years ago, didn't really know what the Patriotic Alliance was about. And you yourself weren't even a member of the Patriotic Alliance at the time. You were part of Make Aldo's Great Again, right? You were the founding member of Make Aldo's Great Again. So what exactly is the mandate, and what's the Patriotic Alliance's stand?
Our stance is to not be masters of the art of politics, like all the other political parties are. And as you rightfully mentioned, that I'm the founder of Make Aldo's Great Again. In other words, I am prone to service. I'm prone to service. The Make Aldo's Great Again movement was based on my activism, and the Patriotic Alliance sort of enables that. It allows me to serve the community. It allows me to ensure that whatever I've been fighting for through that activism, our advocacy group, that I'm able to ensure that it comes through governmental systems. So our mandate is not to master the art of politics, but to specialize in the heart of politics. It's to be on the ground. It's to serve our people. And of course, the big one for us is to ensure that we achieve the dream of reconciling and bringing all races together within this country. And that is what we stand for.
Okay, well, but we're talking about local politics. So at the risk of getting into the same trouble I did when I last brought this up with someone who was running for a local political office, we're not actually interested in you trying to solve the big problems of the universe. What we're interested in is getting traffic lights working, water and electricity supply, collecting rubbish. I don't really care about your big goals and ambitions. And it sounds to me like a lot of hot air from a politician so far. You say how clear you've been clear. You mentioned that three times. I think you used the word clear four times in your opening. It's not clear what the Patriotic Alliance stands for, actually. What do you guys stand for?
Well, Garrett, perhaps if you are not biased to the words that I'm using, I guess it's just semantics. It is not universal goals. And of course, you have a right to your opinion if you feel that it's universal goals.
Don't worry about me. Explain yourself. Talk to the people who are listening. Don't worry about me.
No, I must address your opinion, first of all. I mean, so I'm saying that it's your opinion, that it's universal goals. But when I started, if you listened correctly, I said it is to serve the people. And that term speaks to the fact that we're talking about service delivery. We're talking about fixing potholes. We're talking about ensuring that that the residents of the city has proper health care. When I was MMC of health, we're talking about better roads, better streets, keeping the lights on, the bread and butter issues. We are talking about that. If you see what our president is doing in the central Karoo, he went in there within 100 days, he addressed bread and butter issues. People didn't have, was not using proper toilets. They were using bucket toilets. In 100 days, they are now having proper toilets. Those are bread and butter issues. Fixed pools, brought in factories. Those are bread and butter issues. So the Patriotic Alliance stance is clear and it is practical. So I'm sorry if you don't see that, but I think it's because you have a bias towards what we do.
I happen to have given money to Gates and McKenzie. I happen to have given some money to Gates and McKenzie to build some of those toilets. And I happen to think he's pretty good at what he's doing there. What I'm questioning is what you're doing in Gauteng.
But we're talking about the Patriotic Alliance. And if you want to understand what I'm doing, and thank you for the donation, because that means that you actually believe.
No, you just called me. You called me biased.
You should have mentioned that Gayton McKenzie is dealing with bread and butter issues. That's why you're supporting the PA. But in Gauteng, if you want to address what we have done, and then we must speak about the portfolios that
when you were MMC, how did you make health better as MMC? Tell us that.
That was going to be my question. Yes.
Okay. First of all, I went to the clinics. Instead of just receiving reports, I went to the clinics and we dealt with the issues that was plaguing the local health fraternity or the local health department. For example, when I was working in clinics, helping to clean, to show what it is that we want within the clinics, I discovered, for example, that someone like Auntie Daisy, who is cleaning the EP9 clinic for years, has to buy cleaning material, and there is no cleaning material in clinics. I'm just mentioning one basic thing. And when we got into it, we saw that it is actually true that there's a problem within the supply chain department that was under the MMC, a DAMMC. And we addressed that issue to say health is an essential service. So whatever the challenges are, we've got to ensure that we have basic things such as cleaning materials at clinics. And we addressed that situation, but unfortunately, internally, they were also dragging their feet, and we were not able to do what we want to do within the health department. Secondly, we also dealt with the issue that we want nurses to function properly, but nurses are not receiving a proper salary in comparison to other municipalities. And so how can we expect nurses to do the job that we expect them to do without us rewarding them properly? Two, the organogram structured for nurses, for example, you have a nurse that is trained to deal with people is now an ops manager. The organogram is not structured for the nursing field. This caused a major problem for service delivery. The lines was long, unnecessarily so. And we went I did random visits to clinics and showed how we can ensure that lines get shorter, that there is designated lines for our elderly and our disabled.
Just Ashley, before, I like the fact that you're talking about properly resourced in order to be able to do their jobs. I'm very interested to know how you are properly resourced. What is your background that gives you so much authority to be able to tell us that the organograms in clinics are right or wrong, that nurses are overpaid or underpaid? What is your background that allows you to have this amazing authority?
Firstly, I care. And secondly, I was the MMC of Health and Social Development.
But based on what?
Based on the fact that
the last guy was fired by Gerton McKenzie.
No, based on the fact that whilst I was in
That's
office,
how you got the job, though, right? You got the job to be MMC because the last guy was fired by Gerton McKenzie?
No, that's not correct. That is untrue, but I'll deal with that in a minute. Let me first deal with your first question.
No, please deal with that first.
No, I need to deal with both. I'll deal with both. Firstly, how do I know it and what authority do I have? I was the MMC of Health. I met with the acting ED and all the directors. And then I went to the ground, met with staff to understand what are the issues. And those was one of the burning issues. And then we've got the facts, the statistics, we've got the data. And they showed me how the organogram does not speak to to the field of nursing. So that's how I know based on authority. To your second issue, it is not
true. So someone told you.
No, it is documented. In other words, if you go there now, no matter who's the MMC, and you speak to the technocrats, they will confirm the information I'm giving to you. And it has to change because it's affecting how our nurses are operating on the ground.
So you are not the technocrat. Somebody else is the technocrat. You are a politician. That's your background.
That speaks to the needs of the people. That's the balance that our system brings. You have the technocrats and you have me as the politician who's supposed to bring in what exactly the people are going through on the ground. That's what I did. On your issue of he fired someone for me to come in, that's not true. 2021
was Councillor DeLange. Was Councillor DeLange not fired from the Patriotic Alliance, and that's how you got your position?
Councillor DeLange is a member of the Freedom Front Plus. How can the Patriotic Alliance fire him?
Okay, just give me a second, because in fact, it's not Councillor DeLange, because I'm looking at the Sowetan Live. The Sowetan Live from the 22nd of February is how you got your position. And because you came in to the Patriotic Alliance, we spoke a little bit earlier about your Make Elders Great Again position And you came into the Patriotic Alliance to replace, and at the time, were they not calling you Wembiza? Are you the same person? Are you that same person? Are you Wembiza?
Ombiza is an alter ego that I use online. Let's get back to your wrong information to the public.
Hold on.
That Councillor DeLange was fired and I replaced him. Councillor DeLange is not a member of the Patriotic Alliance. So get your facts straight. Let's first deal with that. How, where do you get information that I replaced Councillor DeLange and he's a member of the Patriotic Alliance? Where do you get that from? Maybe you have an alter ego like Ombiza.
Catherine, do you got any questions?
You are feeding your viewers wrong information.
See, the interesting thing for me here, Gareth, is, you know, not in terms of, you know, whether Ashley's intentions are good and so forth.
Lloyd Phillips is the member that you replaced.
Yeah, it's a question of
Lloyd Phillips, once again, you're providing falsified information, and that's deception, using the truth.
All right, well, correct us. This is what we're here to do.
So correct us. Was Lloyd Phillips fired by Gaitan McKenzie as being a sellout, and then you got to replace him? And so that's how you were sworn in.
Let me correct you first. So you do agree that you were wrong about Councillor
Yes,
DeLange.
I do agree. You have to move on.
Lloyd Phillips is the right name.
Around Lloyd Phillips, I did not become the MMC of Health and Social Development by replacing Lloyd Phillips. At the time I became MMC of Health and Social Development, Lloyd Phillips, Councillor Lloyd Phillips, was or is a member of the Good Party. So I did not replace Lloyd Phillips. You were wrong again. When I became the MMC of Health and Social Development, I did not replace Lloyd Phillips. Lloyd Phillips left the party not this year, not after local government elections. So that is not true. After local government elections, we went from 1 seat to 8 seats. So I didn't replace him to become MMC of Health and Social Development. That's not true.
So actually, then you're saying that the Sunday Times, the Sowetan, have all incorrectly reported on your seat.
As MMC of Health and Social Development?
Well, who was there before you? Who was the MMC of Health and Social Development before you?
Councillor DeLange from the FF Plus in the new administration. And before that, it was MMC Nkina from the MMC, from the ANC. Lloyd Phillips was never the MMC of Health and Social
Development. And how long were you MMC for?
I think for about 3 months, I would think.
All right. And why didn't that last? Is it because the local government collapsed because of the coalitions not holding together?
Yes, because the DA was arrogant and racist. Okay. And as a result, we left the coalition.
So who would you guys be in a coalition with?
Anybody. Our president was clear from the onset. He was the most truthful politician to this country when he said that we will go with anybody. Even the Avia Beer, if I have to quote him.
But they're racist.
So he was truthful about that.
That's the reason you left the DA coalition is because they were racist and arrogant. I mean, surely the Avia Beer are racist by definition. So that's a silly comment to make. It doesn't make sense.
How doesn't it make sense?
Well, you just said you just said why you got out of the DA coalition because of arrogance and racism. Then you tell me,
correct.
Oh, no, but we would be in an alliance with anybody, including the Avia Beer, who by definition are racist. So where are your principles?
That is the principle. The principle is just like during the apartheid regime, Gareth. The reason why we're sitting in a democracy here today is because the brilliance and the wisdom of our leaders then, who knew and understood that if we're going to achieve an aim to transform this country, we're going to have to talk to anybody. But it doesn't mean that when we feel we disagree with that person that we cannot leave. And that's what we've done with the DA, who wants us, who does not want to work with us, but wants us to work for them in apartheid style operations. We're not going to accept
that. I want to get some clarity, Ashley, on exactly that particular question. Now, my understanding is that, and I was not party to this, so you'll need to actually tell me where I'm wrong, but my understanding is that there was a coalition agreement that was drawn up among the members of the coalition. So it was not a DA agreement. It was an agreement between all of the members of the coalition, which clearly outlined the terms for participation, and it defined things like who would be assigned to various positions on the managerial committee and so forth. nowhere in there was there anything that said that if a person is arrogant, then the coalition agreement becomes null and void. Now, was there an agreement that was signed? So that's the first thing. The second thing is, did any of the parties, well, did the DA specifically, breach the terms of that agreement? Or was it just simply a question that you got upset around stuff that the DA was saying and you said, well, you're arrogant and racist and so we are leaving? Because you see, to my mind, those are two different things. And I'm not saying that the DA was not necessarily arrogant or racist, but I do believe that the way in which voters would expect politicians that they have voted for to conduct themselves would be within a framework of at least keeping to their word. And, you know, going back to what you said about the leader of your party, you know, being one of the few politicians who has kept his word and been transparent with the electorate. So now my question is, did the DA actually breach the terms of the coalition agreement that you had in the city of Joburg?
You saying that you're not saying that they're arrogant, but you are giving them the benefit of the doubt. So I'm going to.
No, I'm asking the question.
And I'm answering.
Feel free to correct me. Sure.
I'm answering. So, in terms of the agreement, nothing says. Indeed, you're correct. There's no words that says you leave the coalition if they are arrogant, right? But when you are in an agreement, which is one, the coalition agreement provides for us to have conversation when there are possible proposals for restructuring to strengthen the coalition. And this is what we did as a partner. As a matter of fact, the proposal that we made, all other partners agreed with it. All other partners agreed with it. So let me explain
please,
to you what...
Share that proposal with us, please.
Yes, I'm about to do so. So you have two segments of local government. You have the legislature and you have the executive. And at the time when the speaker was replaced, this now opened an opportunity for us as a coalition now to have discussions around how are we going to now structure local government in order to further strengthen the coalition. And a proposal was made that we have an IFP speaker that was from Action SA. So everyone was part of the discussion, not just Patriotic Alliance. We are so that we balance out things, because the DA had five MMCs on the executive and the legislature is supposed to hold them accountable, but they have a speaker, they have the chief whip on the legislature side. And so the point was, let's balance it out, because now some of the coalition partners also joined later after the coalition agreements were signed. So now we can have renewed discussions to ensure that we balance the things out. The DA
I just want to interrupt for one second, because I'm a bit confused out here. Yeah. Because my understanding was that everything that you're talking about was already built into the coalition agreement. So
that on the time of signing, the coalition agreement did not anticipate that the speaker is going to be removed. So that opened up. It's not rigid. No agreement is rigid. The one you have
just with Garrett. Help me here again. Why was the speaker removed?
The speaker did not act according to his responsibility as a speaker. And some of the other parties put down a vote of no confidence, us as the Patriotic Alliance, even though we had disagreement and we had problems with the speaker that we submitted internally, we still went to council showing integrity as a party. We still went to council and voted with the coalition to keep the speaker Vasco da Gama. But other parties within the coalition did the opposite. So it was not us that removed the speaker, even though we had legitimate issue and we submitted it internally. And then to show you integrity, here's the irony of our integrity. So DA comes back with arrogance, doesn't listen to any of the partners, comes and threatens legal action and all of that kind of stuff, and basically tells us, if you're not going to follow what we say, then it's not going to work. Not just us, but tell that to the entire partners. And that's arrogance. And we said to them, this is what we're going to do in terms of transparency. We're going to tell you what our decision is going to be. We disagree with you. We have tried to come to an amicable agreement. You refuse based on your arrogance. Before we went to council, we informed them and inform the public we're leaving the coalition. So it wasn't underhand, it wasn't scallopies done, because on Baizani, we are very transparent and very clear, and we were clear with them. We said we are leaving this arrangement, which we have the right to do. We are not bound.
I'm hearing everything that you're saying, and but before Pumi asks you the question, I just want to get clarity from you. Did the DA actually breach the terms of the coalition agreement? That's all I'm asking.
Yes,
and that is it's a yes or no question.
By implication, if you are going into an agreement, you have to respect
you're very amazing to me, because you're able to have quite a long response that doesn't quite answer a very short question. You're able to speak, and for a person who started out saying that you are not interested in the politics of politicking and have spent all of this time kind of politicking with all of us and not being honest with us about the terms that were breached and how. What we hear you very clearly as saying, hear you very clearly saying, is that you felt that the DA was arrogant and therefore you were not going to stick to the terms of the agreement. Not that the DA broke the terms of the agreement in any way. That's what we hear you saying. Is that what you're saying?
No, the DA broke the terms of the agreement by us as partners. It is implicit in an agreement to say that we are open to discussion when we are proposing restructuring of a coalition. That's part of the agreement. And for them to take the position that the decision of whether or not it gets restructured is only determined by them is arrogant. And it's against the coalition, the spirit even of that of the coalition agreement. Because we don't work for the DA, it's a partnership. So by virtue of the fact that the agreement allows for us to have a conversation that says, as partners, it's time to restructure. Everyone did that.
In all of this, all of the politicking and all of the moving around of chairs, what then have you been able to deliver on your mandate that gave you one seat in council to the people who have voted for you? What have you been able to deliver?
Do you mean as MMC of Health? I just explained that to you.
No.
What did you deliver as MMC
of
Health?
You said you visited
that
clinics.
That you showed
that's
up
all.
To see Auntie Daisy.
Yeah, that's all. That's what you did. You might as well be paying a social visit. That's what you were doing.
To minimize the fact that no. Unlike any other politician.
We're not minimizing. We're evaluating you. And you seem to me to just have done a social visit or two as MMC for Health during your three-month tenure there, which is probably why it was a good thing that didn't last much longer.
In 3 months, Gareth, in 3 months, right? Einstein
you know,
puts it
Ashley,
this way. He says, allow me to respond, please. Allow me to respond. Einstein says, if he had 1 hour to change the world, he will use 55 minutes to understand the problem and 5 to fix it.
That's not Einstein.
And you're no Einstein.
That's not Einstein. That's Lincoln. But
it's Einstein.
Having said that,
it's Einstein. Okay, nevertheless, Pumi, I don't trust you with
all right.
Who does what.
Ashley, can I tell you something?
And we don't trust you either.
Ashley.
But Einstein is also a physicist.
No,
you've said quite a lot.
Can
for
I just throw this in? For
the
me.
Work that I've done in 3 months.
What
the first
the
thing
word?
You do?
Show us what you've done. What did you do?
I went to clinics. Which
you
MMC
went,
goes
visited
to clinics to understand the problem?
Oh, please. Because they don't understand the problem. That's why they go to visit clinics, because they have no idea of how medicine works, clearly. I mean, listen. It seems to me, Ashley.
If you are going to change
Ashley,
the health
we've spent,
fraternity,
we've
you have
spent,
to change the systems. To change the systems, you must understand the
I think
problem.
Just, you know what? I'm so glad we had you on the show today.
Why don't you ask the people who work
I have
in the
just
department
realized
how
why.
We change the environment? Why don't you ask them? I dare you to go to health. Ask anybody about the changes that was brought. Ask anybody within 3 months. You will hear.
But we've asked you. We've asked
and you. And I'm telling you, but you are minimizing what I'm telling you. So why don't you go
that
to
you visited
that
the clinic?
I can see why you can't form coalitions. I can tell why it's impossible for anyone to work with you in government. You don't listen to anyone. We've only known you for half an hour on this show. I didn't know you before this. Neither did Pumi, neither did Canthan. You are so impossible to have a conversation with that it must be even more difficult to run a coalition with someone like you. I don't know how anybody could deal with someone who so clearly is only interested in their own forwarding and their own political career. It seems to me that you just, I mean, you've even got it in your Twitter bio. Your Twitter handle is MMC Saul's First, right? I mean, you're not the MMC anymore. Change that.
No, I mean, you don't tell me what to do. I mean, you guys are sitting here and you want me to
right.
submit to whatever
it's been
you
very
are
nice.
Saying. And I
it's been very nice.
No, I've just asked questions.
Yeah.
I've just asked questions.
Nice to have you.
You
on.
See, Ashley, I just want to make one point. Okay, the reason why I'm so firm in terms of agreements is that at the point at which I sign an agreement, let's say with the bank. And if I go back to the bank and I'm having a discussion to renegotiate the terms of my loan, not that I have loans with the banks because I'm debt-free, but let's park that. But if I'm going to the bank and I want to renegotiate the terms of my loans, I can't walk away from there and say, I'm not going to be paying my installments to the bank because you guys are arrogant and racist. Yes, I accept that the banks are arrogant and racist, but I have signed an agreement with them. And my point, very simply, is that the Patriotic Alliance was party to a signed coalition agreement. And so whether or not people are arrogant or racist, at the point at which you withdraw from an agreement that you have affixed your signature to, that is a breach of contract. And that's the issue that I have here.
No, it's not.
And I'm not saying that you are not telling the truth in terms of the DA potentially being arrogant or racist. Not that I think that they are, because we had the mayor in here 2 weeks ago, and there are many words that I could use about the mayor, but arrogant and racist are certainly not terms that I would apply to her. So
your position is clear that you are in defense of the DA, right? So
no,
I'm in defense
of the rule of law.
No,
I'm in defense
the
rule
of
law.
So the analogy that you use about a loan with the bank, and if you have that agreement, firstly, that wasn't the same kind of agreement. We don't owe the DA anything, right?
Can you do us a favor? Can you do us a favor? Can you tweet that coalition agreement? You know, actually bring it out into the open.
Why don't you ask the DA, which you are so in defense of? And I'm sure you've already read it. From the onset, you haven't listened to my responses.
Please share the agreement with us.
It's not our agreement, it's theirs, right? So they're still using it. We don't. We have no interest in it. So you can ask them. In terms of the analogy that you used, if we sit and I have a loan agreement with the bank and I have an issue with how it's operating and I sit with the bank and the leadership of the bank and the bank gives me an impression that because we have this arrangement, I just need to sit and listen to them and I have no choice in the matter. I can opt out. I can go to another bank. This is what we've done. But because you're looking it through a lens that favors the DA and pulls down the PA no matter what we do, that's the reason why that's your position. And I'm not surprised, and I'm not gonna sit here and subject myself to your biased opinion, and I shouldn't respond in the way that I am. I don't care what you think about us or what you think about me.
I don't care. Because we are voters.
Okay.
You should. Well, because we are voters.
Then we're done.
And I think that, you know,
but
and
as
thank
voters,
you for coming on the show. Thank you for
but
coming
you are
on the show.
Presenters too.
Thanks very much.
Thank you for coming on the show. And I think it's a fascinating way to have an opportunity to see the people that we vote for and try and hear what it is that they're saying. I think it is a very eye-opening conversation here that we have had with the pastor. Wimpiza, Pastor Ashley Saulz, leader of Make Elders Great Again, and now former MMC for Health in the Patriotic Alliance. You make your own decision, which is the alter ego that you will be voting for.
All right. Thank you, everybody. That's The Burning Platform for today. We'll see you tomorrow morning, 6
a.m. It was certainly different, guys.
Cheers. CliffCentral.com.